podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Wayne Roberts. Right now, we're reading Girl Reporter from my Cookie Cutter Superhero series. Before I get started on today's chapter, I just want to let you know, I always give a bit of a shout out to my Patreon, which is a crowdfunding platform where people can pay a small monthly pledge for cool rewards. It is the thing that supports this podcast more than anything and makes it possible for me to put the time into writing the new stories when there are new stories and doing the podcast every week. Big thank you to all my Patreon supporters who put in anywhere between $1 and $20 a month to support me and my writing and this podcast in particular. So thank you all. Right now I'm having a limited time special offer on my Patreon. So all $5 supporters, or those pledging higher than $5, who sign on by the 18th of April 2019, Australian time, get a special limited edition enamel pin. I've commissioned it from Kathleen Jennings. I've already talked to you all about how much I love her artwork. The pin is adorable. It is a magical hedgehog in a magical teacup. Inspired by my story, Tea and Sympathetic Magic, which is also currently a Patreon exclusive. But if you sign up, you get to read that story. And if you sign up at $5, you get that pin. So, yeah, it's a limited edition special offer. And we have about a week and a half as this podcast goes live for you to be eligible for the special offer. If you're listening to this podcast in the future, I am sorry, the special offer has closed. So yeah, if you're interested, if you've been thinking about signing up to my Patreon, I know a lot of people do come from this podcast to that, and I'm really grateful for that. So having done my official spruiking, I'm now going to read you this week's chapter. Girl Reporter, Chapter 6, And Our Friends Are All Aboard. Hey friends, Friday Valentina here, and you are not going to believe where I'm filming this week's Friday Report. I'm an expert at holding my phone at the perfect flattering angle for filming on the run, which usually means me hovering at a street corner, while some real heroes smack around monsters or villains or killer robots far above me. I've got some of my best footage that way. Today, I was wearing an oversized vintage Kid Duck hoodie, which Griff bought me as a joke last Christmas. A gift he regrets, because I love this thing and I wear it everywhere. An Astra beanie pulled down over my purple hair, my favourite thick-rimmed hipster glasses rounded out today's look. The backdrop of my vid was a silver-rimmed porthole, looking out at the swirling vortex of extra-dimensional space. So it's likely not too many people would give a flying alien starfish about my wardrobe choices. This beautiful lady is a substellar mobile, otherwise known as Audrey. Yours truly is part of a covert rescue mission to the Palace Zone space dimension, ruled by Australia's longtime favourite supervillain of the century, Queen Megadethra herself. I smirk at the camera. When I say supervillain of the century, I mean the 20th century, of course. Megadethra's getting a bit long in the tooth these days. She hasn't invaded Australia since the original Solar left the building. Or so we thought. The Dark turned his cowl in my general direction. Covert rescue mission, he reminded me in his heavy voice of doom. It's not like I'm live streaming this, I protested. There's no Wi-Fi on this boat. Probably for the best, called out Griff. We wouldn't want to tip the enemy off. Megadethra learned everything about our dimension by watching our entertainment channels. That does explain her dynasty hair and Barbarella outfits, I conceded, then turned my attention back to my phone. Who is taking part in this exciting team outing, you ask? Let's introduce the gang. Astra smiled and sparkled as I swung the phone in her direction. The gorgeous and talented Astra has the dimensional sympathy necessary to pilot a ship of this nature. How are you finding it, Astra? A smooth ride, but I don't have much to do, Astra said cheerily. All I have to do is point and click. The navigation happens on a microcellular level, adjusting with every dimensional shift to make sure we end up in the right place. And, of course, that we get home to exactly the version of Earth that we left. I continued, and sitting in the completely unnecessary co-pilot seat because he has control issues, we have the longest-serving Aussie superhero in our current team lineup, The Dark! The Dark stared stoically ahead, ignoring my existence. I was already moving on. He's much more cheerful once he's had his morning protein shake. And here we have a completely anonymous civilian. Cheers, said Griff, keeping his face turned away from the camera. Kadak! I coughed into my hand, and thereby my phone. Friday! It doesn't count as outing you once you've sold your story to Pam McMillan, bro. Everyone knows who you are. Oh, speaking of which, the final member of our team requires no introduction. I zoomed in on Joey, who was reclining on a yellow beanbag at the back of a cabin with an Amy Kaufman novel. She wore her full solar costume with an oversized floppy sun hat, because apparently this mission was so unofficial, it technically counted as holiday time. I hummed a few bars of Walking on Sunshine, just stopping short enough of having to pay song royalties. Joey tipped up her hat and gave me that stunner smile of hers. The cabin around us brightened as if her hat had been protecting us from her sunshine. So, Solar, I said, after swallowing once because my mouth was suddenly sort of dry, how would you rate extra-dimensional travel? I thought it would be faster. I know, right? When alien hordes use dimensional travel to move between realities, they appear to zap instantaneously out of nowhere. Wormholes, portals, that sort of thing. I would have thought, since we were using a ship based on their technology, it'd be much the same. We should have appeared at my mother's side in the blink of an eye. Right? Apparently the preteen boffins who got this crate shipshape were concerned that Earth's computers didn't have the precision for those instant calculations. So we had a slower, stator form of extra-dimensional travel, in which multiple potential realities were catalogued and filed during transit. It's entirely possible they were so keen on the data we could provide with this trip, they deliberately put us on the slow route. But no one had asked me to pay for petrol or snacks, so I wasn't going to complain too loudly. It had been hours, and there was no sign that our destination was in sight. Astra was lost in the art of piloting, fascinated by her controls. The Dark watched her like a hawk, as if he had any idea how this technology worked. He'd secured a copy of the manual, which he read pointedly every time he could bear to tear his visor away from Astra. Griff took custody of the beanbag, napping. He'd wanted to bring a bigger crew along for the rescue mission, but we'd been lucky to secure two of Australia's five current active superheroes, and Danny and Buckshot, former members of the superhero club who were still up for a decent fight these days, blew us off to go to a wedding fair together. The lack of connectivity with home really sucked. If ever there was a journey that deserved to be live-streamed, it was this one. I took some pics of sleeping Griff anyway, for posterity. Hey, said Solar softly, from the doorway. She crooked a finger at me. Come on. Why, yes, I was at her beck and call. The wrecked cabin at the back of the ship had an ever better view of the spiralling vortex. Here you got to look back at the dizzy shapes of all the realities you'd travelled through, instead of the nothingness you're moving towards, which felt weirdly more relaxing. A cushioned bench ran around the curved edge of the view screen, like an old-fashioned window seat. Whoever was in charge of the aesthetics of this road trip funky-mobile had placed candy pink and purple throw cushions against the wall. The lack of lava lamps was a grave disappointment. Travelling in style, I said, with only a hint of irony. Solar sat down with her feet on the bench, her arms resting on her knees. I've never done anything like this before, she said wistfully. I mean, this is space, right? Or the next best thing. Come on, you've totally gone into space, I said, sitting near her, my feet brushing hers on the bench. You've been to the moon. I wasn't going to stare at her arm, the one with what she called her curve instead of a hand. She seemed so much more comfortable with her body than she had been the first time I interviewed her. I guess there's a big difference between comfort levels at 16 and at 20 regardless of disability. Sure, the moon, said Joey, drumming the fingers of her right hand against her knee. But this is huge and unknown and far. I gave her my best sarcastic face. To some people, the moon is pretty far. You think I'm spoiled? She was delighted, like no one had ever said shit like that to her face. I guess being a superpowered celebrity, it could be true. Most of the criticisms of Girl Solar happened in the digital space and on TV, by anonymous assholes and paid pundits alike. Did she really never see any of that crap? Solar wasn't smart enough, she wasn't grateful enough, she wasn't pretty enough, she wasn't progressive enough. She was too feminist. She shouldn't have let that photographer use the cover shot that made it obvious she had boobs. She should show more skin. She should fix all the third world's problems before daring to speak off about injustices at home. She should keep her goddamn mouth shut about anything that wasn't superheroing. She should keep her goddamn mouth shut about superheroing. It felt like every other magazine or TV show or social media account was angry about how she dared to be a role model at all. Like being young and female and having something to say was a massive, unprecedented transgression. They all agreed it was weird she didn't have a boyfriend. They also agreed she was secretly dating A, the Dark, B, an Olympic swimming champion, C, some hottie on Neighbours, D, J. Jupiter, aka Griff. I wanted to say something about how great she was without sounding stupid. I knew a tiny fraction of what it was like to be a woman in the public eye, mostly from observing my mother's long history, not to mention moderating my own comment section. I liked being on YouTube because there was control there and distance. I didn't have to stand up in front of my audience every day and smile at cameras while saving the world. I had the luxury of glaring at the paparazzi if I wanted to, and saying bitchy things about them on Twitter. Do you ever get tired of people looking at you all the time, wanting you to be their hero? I asked. It was a question I'd never asked my mother. I live in a sky tower, and little girls dress up as me for birthday parties, said Joey lightly. I know how lucky I am. I felt like that was exactly the same answer I would have got from her if I was holding up my phone to record it, and tried not to look dejected. Hey, said Joey a moment later, in a low voice that didn't sound anything like official public statement from Solar. Could be a while before we get anywhere. Do you want to make out? Oh, I said, stopping to recalibrate literally everything I thought I knew about her. Possibly I'd solved the Solar boyfriend mystery. Go me. She raised an eyebrow, laughing silently. And I realised I hadn't answered her question, too busy gaping at her pretty face. News just in. New Solar thinks she's hilarious. Update at 11. She's really good at kissing. 15 minutes later, I was lying on the window seat of an extra-dimensional spaceship with an armful of superhero. Joey was warm to the touch, like she was running a slight fever. Her tongue tasted a little like electricity, and a lot like summer. We were still fully dressed, conscious of the fact that we were not alone on this junk heap, but that didn't stop us getting to know what each of us felt like under a layer or two of clothing. This also didn't prevent Griff freaking out when he walked in and saw us. He yelped and rushed out again, closing the door with a snap. Seriously, Fry? See, I said in a low murmur. I told you he'd blame me. Joey kissed the tip of my nose, making no move to put distance between us. Sucks to be you. 2 minutes later, a calmer Griff knocked on the door. Astra says we're getting somewhere. Well, I was trying, I huffed. Joey laughed and rolled off me. Later. We've got time. Megadethra's palace zone is rife with cracks and warps in reality, said Astra. Probably because she's used wormholes, cosmic eggs, and a bunch of other portal technologies to invade other dimensions so many times. That means a bunch of hazards the closer we get. Mum had the right idea, I remarked. She bypassed all of this by being kidnapped directly. Why hadn't I thought of that? Griff passed me a protein bar. I passed it back to him and made impatient grabby motions until he passed me a packet of astronaut ice cream instead. We'd only been gone 12 hours. I don't know why we couldn't have packed sandwiches, cupcakes. The duck silently judged Astra, switching over to autopilot while she prepped us. He loomed near the controls, ready and willing to grab the reins at a moment's notice, despite the fact that there were no reins, and he didn't have the dimensional whiz-bang to be any use at it. Bless. "What kind of hazards are you talking about?" asked Joey, accepting her protein bar dutifully. We kicked Griff off the yellow beanbag so we could use it, which meant we got to sit very close. I offered her some of my astronaut ice cream, which earned me a very nice smile. "Rogue travellers who live out here for the most part," said Astra. "Dimension pirates, dimes for short. They attack other ships and break them down for parts and supplies." "That sounds like a made-up thing," I said. "Dimension pirates. You can't just put the word dimension in front of everything. Do they eat at dimension cafes and drink at dimension bars? Do they knit dimension socks for each other's dimension birthdays? There's also flying creatures that live out here, subsisting on broken fragments at the edge of dimensional portals," said Astra. I gave her a flat look. "Don't say it." "They're called dinosaurs. You are making this up." "It's in the manual," the dark confirmed. If we were in a horror movie, now would be the moment that a large, squawking, flying monster crashed into our ship and screamed at us. But it didn't happen, because we weren't in a horror movie, and dinosaurs were not a thing. Thank you for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates, follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly, find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books, and if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. The special offer is open until 18th of April, Australian time, so beware of time differences. It can make all the difference. Also, be aware that my Patreon has really recently changed names. It used to be patreon.com/musketeerspace. It's now patreon.com/tansyrr, which should make it much easier for people to find, as long as they're not used to the old name. So be careful of old links. Okay, see you next week for more Girl Reporter.